Which brings us to the central question. Why did Sayuri want her story told? Geisha may not take any formal vow of silence, but their existence is predicated on the singularly Japanese conviction that what goes on during the morning in the office and what goes on during the evening behind closed doors bear no relationship to one another and must always remain compartmentalized and separate. Geisha simply do not talk for the record about their experiences. Like prostitutes, their lower-class counterparts, geisha are often in the unusual position of knowing whether this or that public figure really does put his pants on one leg at a time like everyone else. Probably it is to their credit that these butterflies of the night regard their roles as a kind of public trust. But in any case, the geisha who violates that trust puts herself in an untenable position. Sayuri's circumstances in telling her story were unusual, in that no one in Japan had power over her any longer. Her ties with her native country had already been severed. This may tell us, at least in part, why she no longer felt constrained to silence, but it does not tell us why she chose to talk. I was afraid to raise the question with her. What if, in examining her own scruples on the subject, she should change her mind? Even when the manuscript was complete, I felt reluctant to ask. Only after she had received her advance from the publisher did I feel it safe to query her. Why had she wanted to document her life? "What else do I have to do with my time these days?" she replied. As to whether or not her motives were really as simple as this, I leave the reader to decide. Though she was eager to have her biography recorded, Sayuri did insist upon several conditions. She wanted the manuscript published only after her death and the deaths of several men who had figured prominently in her life. As it turned out, they all predeceased her. It was a great concern of Sayuri's that no one be embarrassed by her revelations. "Whenever possible, I have left names unchanged, though Sayuri did hide the identities of certain men, even from me." Through the convention rather common among geisha of referring to customers by means of an epithet. When encountering characters such as Mr. Snow Showers, whose moniker suggests itself because of his dandruff, the reader who believes Sayuri is only trying to amuse may have misunderstood her real intent. When I asked Sayuri's permission to use a tape recorder, I intended it only as a safeguard against any possible errors of transcription on the part of her secretary. Since her death last year, however, I have wondered if I had another motive as well, namely, to preserve her voice, which had a quality of expressiveness I have rarely encountered. Customarily, she spoke with a soft tone, as one might expect of a woman who had made a career of entertaining men. But when she wished to bring a scene to life before me, her voice could make me think there were 6 or 8 people in the room. Sometimes still, I play her tapes during the evenings in my study and find it very difficult to believe she is no longer alive. Jacob Harhuis, Arnold Russoff, Professor of Japanese History, New York University.